Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of A Gem of a Secret Podcast. My name is Coco Gem Holiday. Tonight, I decided to dress like a bottle of iodized salt, and it is Winco brand. They are not a sponsor of this episode, but I thought that would be funny. So it's a very ovally shaped outfit, and I look like a box, and I can't sit in this dress. So, as we continue on in our journey of let's learn about what's happening in Coco Gem Holiday's life, we're going to take a little bit of a deviation because on the day that this is getting posted, it actually turns out that Jerry Springer died at the age of 79. I don't know a lot of the details, but it does remind me of when I was younger, and Jerry Springer usually would come on in the middle of the day, or it would be after like a subset of cartoon shows, and it just reminded me of my youth a lot, and so I thought today's episode could be about youth. Now, when I was younger, I did know that I was different than the other kids. I did know that I knew that I just wasn't necessarily, I guess, straight, if I want to be completely honest. I didn't necessarily know the concept of sexual orientation, but I felt a little bit different. I also was raised by my mom and my sister, as I've said in earlier episodes of this podcast. And that experience has actually shaped me in a lot of different ways because I never was afraid of femininity. My mom was the woman who could fix a car. She also cut the grass. She also cleaned house. She could do all the gender norms that, you know, you hear about between men and women. And my mom did it all because she had to. Like, it was her house. She had two kids. So you have to. I never really saw my mom, like, hire a handyman until way later in life. I never saw her really take her car to a mechanic unless it was a big deal. My mom could reorganize a garage and stack things up to the ceiling, and she used to climb on the house and, you know, clean out the gutters, and she painted the house herself, and it just, you know, my mom was the Renaissance person. She could do it all. And I always admired that about her. And then my sister was a person who was insanely into sports. She was a gymnast and she was very athletic. She did cheerleading as well, and she was involved in a lot of different ways. She wasn't the best student, but she was involved in a lot of different ways. And so I grew up with strong women around me. And my family in Colorado, which I didn't realize until later in life that this was really odd, that my grandmother, my aunt, and my mom all lived within like 15 to 20 minutes of each other. It's just, as a kid, you just think that's how it works. Like, your family's always close, but that's not always the case. And so my entire life, I just had a lot of women around me. And so I was never afraid of femininity, and I actually leaned into it because that's what I saw around me. You know, like, there is something to be said about nature versus nurture. And so as I got older and recognized what being a man was supposed to be, my father, and the reason I'm saying it that way is my father, I remember this argument that we got into when I was a kid. I used to do this thing where I used to, you know, self-soothing tactics that kids do. I used to stand with my hands clasped, like I would always have my left hand holding the wrist of my right hand, and that's how I stood. I always stood like that. I don't know why. It was just like a self-soothing thing. It was a protection thing. It was a safety thing. And I remember one time my dad was at my house, and my dad is, for lack of a better term, he's a little bit of an angry man. And I remember him smacking my hands and being like, "Men don't stand like that. Men don't stand like that." And I recognized even in that moment as a kid that that was not a bad thing to stand like that. Men don't necessarily stand. Oh, and then I do remember right after he told me, like, men stand with their hands on their sides, their hands in their pocket, and if you need to clasp your hands, you do it behind you, which is not even a thing. It was just my dad being verbally abusive for no reason. And because it's true. I mean, there's no way that a man stands. And it's not just because of, like, you know, neo-gender ideals. It is literally just because there's not really a way that a man stands. And so even with those gender norms. And then also, I remember crossing my arms, and then my dad got mad at that because when you cross your arms, it implies you're upset. Yeah, that. Welcome to my childhood. But I always leaned into the feminine stuff more. I remember trying on my sister's dresses. I remember playing with her Barbie dolls. And I played with her Barbie dolls specifically because she was playing with them and I wanted to be able to hang out with my sister. But I was a kid who was insanely into video games. I loved this is gonna date me, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles when I was way younger, and then I was in love with Power Rangers as I got older, and I wasn't obsessed with the Pink Ranger as well, and I was obsessed with the Pink Ranger because she had, which is funny, and this is gonna, I know it sounds like this is all over the map, but this also plays in. The reason I liked the Pink Ranger is because she was different. She was the only one that had a skirt on. And then the other thing about the Pink Ranger is she was the only one who had truly kind of ranged attacks because she had a bow and arrow. So she had ranged attacks. And as a kid, I was always afraid of getting hurt. So ranged attacks made sense to me, right? And I know that the people like play into like, well, like you knew you were queer if you liked Kimberly from Power Rangers, but it was always a little bit more nuanced than that when it came to me, like, because nowadays, like, so for those of you who don't know, and those are the new people who are listening to this podcast, I am bisexual, I am bigender, these are the labels that I go by, and these are the identities that I hold very confidently in myself. And when you think about gender as being a social construct, like, I was raised by women. And so these ideas and about how I want to present myself to the world were shaped with having no negativity involving femininity. And I think that that needs to be said. Like, I always thought it was really empowering to be a woman, and not empowering because I'm like, oh my gosh, look at the strength of women. It was the strong people in my life were women. And the men that were in my life were angry. And I do mean that, like the men in my life were angry, it seemed like, or disappointed, or seemed to be struggling through life in a lot of different ways. And so I wanted to be a woman because I recognized that there was power in that. And I know that people are like, well, see, this is why we talk about gender being like, like especially for trans identities, they're like, see, it's based on how you're raised, it's based on your race. And it's like, no, there are things in my core as I grew up recognizing that being bigender isn't necessarily because of not knowing that sorry, let me say it this way. Growing up having femininity being the power in my household is not what made me bigender. Being bigender was because the feeling of the feeling out of place in my own skin, unless I was presenting a specific way. And I mean, because we talk about dysphoria and euphoria all the time when it comes to gender, and there was a lot of moments when I would see facial hair and it would like make my stomach like clench. There were times when I would have longer hair and it would make that feeling in my stomach like clench. It's really hard to describe that feeling of dysphoria. Like it really is. And I mean that because when you're discovering that your gender identity isn't as simple as being a one or the other, but multiple or different at points in time or fluid or non-conforming, it takes some time to figure it out because one day you feel completely fine, and then another day you feel disgusted with who you are and everything that you presented, even if you're wearing the same clothes from the night before. And so, as a kid, having these identities around me, being my mom, my sister, and my dad, and I will say that my parents got divorced when I was two, but my dad lived, I think, roughly about 35 minutes away. Every time I hung out with my dad, I recognized that I wanted so much to have a connection with this person because it was going to, I even knew as a kid that this was going to help me shape my future. Like, even in on bare bones, that I just really wanted to have my dad be able to teach me how to shave or something like that and learn from him about how to do X and how to do Y and how to do Z. When I was younger, my mom, sorry, when I was around the age of 12, my mom actually sent me away for the summer because I was just, I was a preteen and I was a mess, to go live with my dad. And at this time, he lived in Connecticut. And I spent 3 months with him. But he also had a job where he lived in Connecticut. Like, there was one neighbor across the street, I suppose. And then, like, the next house was like, well, at least I was a kid, so I felt like it was like half a mile away, but it probably was just like, I don't know, it was probably like a quarter of a mile, like, no big deal. And But I remember I was alone for most of that summer. And my dad has an extensive video collection, like a VHS collection. So what I did almost every single, so Monday through Friday, what I did was I woke up and I watched movies for like a whole summer. I would just watch movies and movies and more movies and more movies just every day. And then on the weekends, my dad would plan activities for us to do. But yeah, I did that for probably about 3 months. And I do remember that I was so bored one day that I actually ended up just going to a like a market, like a gas station that was like a couple miles away. Like I walked there 'cause I was just so bored. But he was supposed to be teaching me how to be a man. He was teaching me how to, not be as rude to my mom and things like that or whatever. And that's kind of where my summer kind of kicked off. I remember just always trying to figure out, which even to this day, I feel like I'm still doing that, trying to figure out who I was and what it meant for my gender identity and my sexual orientation. I remember being that kid who would watch Jerry Springer and looking at the people fighting with each other and recognizing that that's not what I wanted from life. I really wanted to discover who I am because it feels like the bare bones of everything is people just not knowing who they were. And through most of my life, it was just a continual journey of just trying to discover who I am. And so, actually, before I tell you all who I am based on who I was as a child, how are you doing? Let me know in the comments.
Hey everybody, you know sometimes how you get really bored on a Tuesday? Well, I have something for you. We just started up a weekly bingo show at North Bar PDX. It's located at 5008 Southeast Division Street. It starts at 7 o'clock p.m. It's hosted by Carly J. Phoenix, Autumn Rains, and Coco Jump Holiday. It is free to play for the first round for everybody. After that, we do kind of charge for the cards just so we can get a little bit of money. And also, the bar has the coolest vibe. The bartenders are so cool, so funny, so sweet, and everything you want on an easy-to-have Tuesday. It usually runs from 7 o'clock p.m. to 9 o'clock p.m. And hey, it's bingo. Everybody should know how to play. And remember, it's five squares for a bingo. More information, check it out on our website at agemofasecretpodcast.com. Just click at the events section and you can see all of the events that the CDS Drag Productions has to offer.
It's a podcast.
Check it
out. Tune into what they tell you podcast.
Check
And we are back, listeners. I want to go over a couple of things that happened this week and why it applies to the story. So I kind of really do know who I am now. I know we're on a consistent journey of learning and unlearning, but I kind of know who I am now. I'm a 36-year-old individual, just to let everybody know, for some of my new listeners. And there was a scandal this week that happened to me. It's the same as the scandal that happened last week, actually, which is funny. I had a drag entertainer in my community who is consistently like posting my name online and saying half-truths and untruths about, and, it's just their perception of me, and they rated me. The weird part about this is there are other people that they are also mad at, but I'm the only one that's really getting named. Then when she deleted these posts and recreated them, I still was the only one named, and then she just made reference to other people. And I kind of did a clap back today, and I want to talk about this. Sorry, I did a clapback yesterday or the day before, whatever, and I wanted to talk about this because I'm recognizing that I know that I am not a person who appreciates posting screenshots on the internet. I'm not a person who appreciates cancel culture. I'm not a person who appreciates bullying and things like that. But after week two of this individual kind of coming for me, is why when I decided to act as messy as people would hope I would act. People want that drama. People want to see screenshots. They want to see receipts and whatever. And that's just really untrue to my core as who I am. This individual was talking about my producing style. And I like to be really lax when it comes to how I produce shows. I am one of those people who, like, I don't really necessarily care if you get your music in late. I'm not necessarily one of those people if you don't have the most polished costumes or the most, like, or the largest number of followers. I just want people to show up and have a good time for my audiences. I believe a drag show is about entertainment for the audience. I know that there can sometimes be drag artistry where the artistry is, like you are coming to see the spectacle, this art that I'm serving you. And then other times it's just so everybody can have a couple drinks and laugh. And I love the kind of drag shows where you can just have a couple drinks and laugh. It makes it fun. I don't know. That's what I love about drag. It's one of my favorite things about drag. And so they were talking about, they said, Coco did these three actions to me. And because these are my stories, I can share them. I am one of those people who I will sometimes book when I've been drinking at a bar. And I guess with this individual, I didn't necessarily follow up with potentially booking them. So that was one reason that they didn't agree with me. Another time, they had asked for a higher booking fee than what I could offer. And they said, hey, can you pay me more money? And I said, that would not be doable. So they posted that online. Like you could imagine, like I killed a puppy or something like that. The final thing is they didn't like the order in which I paid them. We did a big production of Rocky Horror, and this person wasn't actually the last person paid, but they posted online that they were the last person paid, and they are a houseless individual. And so that was just really wrong of me. How could I have done that? That's so awful that I paid them last. Do keep in mind they did get paid, but they said that I paid them last, and that was so wrong considering that this person showed up for every single one of the practices, and it was so hard. And that probably was hard considering their circumstances. However, they weren't paid last. And so, and I know, like, even saying all three of these things out loud, and you're like, wait a second, this person came for you on the internet because of these three things. Yes. And then the people that they tagged after me were people who they called out for being sexual predators and things like that. So I got ranked in the categories of people who are sexual predators, apparently. And that was also hurtful. They ended up deleting that post, and then reposting it, just tagging my name, of course, and then just ambiguously referencing sexual predators is what happened. And then earlier this week, because that was all last week, earlier this week, I got tagged again saying, well, another thing that I don't like about Coco Gem Holiday is blah, 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 blah. And talking about it on this podcast, because I use this podcast to process through things. One of the things that's really interesting to me is that over the last year, I have been kind of just staying in my own lane. I don't really perform a lot in queer spaces because I do tend to feel like queer spaces offer a lot more criticism. I wanted to just be able to have fun doing drag, so I brought it back to its roots where I'm doing it in straight bars mostly, and we're all laughing and having a good time. And I kind of keep to myself. I don't really comment on other people's things as much as I used to, because I don't necessarily want drama. I don't necessarily need all this online nonsense. But it still happened anyway. So it's like even if when I tried to pull away from it still happened to me anyway, and it still happened aggressively in a way that was really uncomfortable. I will admit that there were people that came out of the woodwork to defend me to this individual, saying things like, "Why are you only attacking Coco? Like, what is going on here? I'm really confused." Like Coco is like a black non-cis person who has done great things for the community, but yet she's the only one when you're mentioning that other people have harmed you, but you're the only you're only naming her by name on the internet. And when people say like, "Don't let the things get to you," and I want to talk about this even more, when people say things like, "Well, don't let it bother you," and the thing is, it doesn't necessarily bother me. But I'm also not going to let somebody just continually bully me either. People tend to think that when you ignore something, it can make the problem go away. When people dislike you for whatever reason and you're not giving them a reaction, I've been finding more often than not, it doesn't actually shut them up. It just makes them go even harder because they tend to start seeing you, at least in my opinion, they start seeing you as an easy target. And then they start continually keep coming after you and coming and coming and coming and coming. And a lot of the times I've had my name posted online, in Portland specifically, it has been on the most insignificant things I've ever seen. And it's not because I'm invalidating their feelings. It's just like I said this recently on a post. It's like people come at me in Portland for like sneezing into my elbow incorrectly. Like it just they just need something to talk about. People said haters gonna hate, people got too much time on their hands, things like that. And I am an incredibly booked performer in this city. I have a lot of gigs, like a lot of gigs from week to week, doing, you know, what I want to do and getting to have this life that I love so very much. And so I talk about all of this, one, because I said that I was going to be more honest on this podcast and talk about my life without pulling the punches. And so one thing I will admit is where it actually got to me is the fact that I had noticed that people weren't really checking in on me. And I know that this can seem petty and accusatory and mean, and people get defenses when you say that. But this second time around, I noticed that a lot of my friends didn't ask me the one simple question, Coco, how are you doing? I didn't really get that this time. And that kind of hurt my feelings. I can take care of myself, and I know I'm a strong individual, and it is not anybody's responsibility or job to check in on me. But I noticed that no one really did outside of my husband this last time. And I also know that if people had to check on me, they'd have to do it consistently because people tend to come for me a lot. But I, you know, and it made me reevaluate where I sit in people's eyes. It made me reevaluate, you know, that thing about like if things are consistently happening to you, maybe you are the problem. And looking inward on this situation, I don't necessarily think that I'm the problem because I didn't really do anything to this individual. They just didn't like some of the decisions I made. And they, instead of talking to me about it, instead of ever writing me about it, instead of pulling me aside or doing anything like that, they decided to just post about me online without saying any kind of words to me. And my friends didn't really check in on me. And as woe is me as this sounds, that's not what I'm doing here. I also realize that maybe I need to be a better friend to my friends so that then they feel more open to checking in on me when I'm not doing well, especially in moments where it's getting public and people are having an opinion about my life and who I am. Because the point of this podcast today is who I am now and then and now. And when I was younger and like I was talking about the story about my dad smacking my hands away for not standing like a man because that was his reaction. A lot of people didn't like my reaction about posting, reposting what this girl said about me. People didn't like the fact that I was making it bigger than it needed to be. People didn't like the fact that I was reacting poorly to a negative incident. And I will say subjectively poorly, because most of the times what I do when people come for me is I say nothing. I let it just die down and, you know, we just move on from it. But what I also notice is that when I don't say anything, I don't actually end up feeling better. For the first time in a long time, even though I don't believe in this at all, reposting that and then sharing this thing about this person bullying me actually made me feel a lot better. I know that as Black individuals, we have to consistently remain mad calm. That's what we call it, mad calm. Where we can't get too violent, we could get arrested and get shot or murdered. We can't get too angry because we'll be seen as the angry Black person. We can't get too in our feelings because if we get too emotional, that might wind us up in some handcuffs. We can't threaten any kind of violence because people will take it serious. We can't express ourselves too loudly unless we're in Black spaces because our joy can sometimes scare non-Black people. And so a person consistently coming for me and me getting angry and or hurt about it too loudly could have negative results for me. And so I have, you know, in 36 years of life, I've learned very well how to be mad calm from a bunch of negative incidents in my 20s. I've learned how to censor myself and calm myself down to be able to think rationally about the things that are happening in front of me. And I was also kind of just sick of it. I came home yesterday from work and my roommate had asked me, they said, how are you doing? I said, I'm fine mostly. And they're like, just mostly. And I said, I'm angry. I was angry because it was the second week in a row of online bullying. I was hurt that nobody really checked in on me. And I had a lot of really loud emotions that I feel as Black people, we're not given the luxury of having in the ways that we want to have them and how we want to have them. I sit as a manager in my boy job, and being too emotional as a boy manager, like a mask presenting manager for a team of mostly guys, I have to remain strong and vigilant. And that isn't something that somebody said to me. It just feels like the nature of being in the corporate world. And so I'm angry. My best friend Autumn had said to me, I was worried about you because it seemed like you were acting like a scared cat that was backed into a corner. And I actually really hate that phrasing because it implies that I'm weak and I'm not. I didn't feel backed into a corner. I felt like I chose a different tactic. Like, instead of just being quiet and just letting people consistently write a narrative about me, like if you've ever seen the TV show Scandal, that's what it's about. I thought, I was like, you know what? I was like, I don't need this narrative to be written about me. I can write this narrative myself. And so I did. And I felt really good about it afterwards. And I know that people might say from hearing this, they're like, but what if they're going through a mental health crisis? And as I've said on this podcast before, even with a mental health crisis, it is not a free pass to treat someone like dirt. It is not a free pass to treat somebody less than. It is not a free pass to be abusive to other individuals. It might be the reason that you're doing it, but it's not an excuse, and it does not give you a pass. It does not give you a pass. And so, especially when I say this all the time, like, you don't have to stick around when somebody treats you like trash. You really don't. You don't have to stick around for abuse just because you love and or care about someone. You don't have to stick around just because you feel like it's the right thing to do. You don't have to give people grace because it's the right thing to do. Sometimes you can push back and sometimes you can walk away. And I will say 9 times out of 10, I'm going to definitely walk away from those situations because I don't need to have that negativity in my life. I want to grow and be a person that, I can love and appreciate in the mirror. Yesterday, I didn't necessarily love who I was in the mirror, but it did make me feel better. So, from the death of Jerry Springer till today, or sorry, from my childhood knowing about Jerry Springer till today, I am a ball of experiences, and how I act and respond to situations are going to probably consistently change for the rest of my life. As queer people, we are always having to evaluate how we operate. As Black people, we are consistently having to check how we operate. We code switch and operate different ways depending on the nature of who's going to see us and how we're going to be received. And sometimes I just want to be angry in whatever way that comes forth. And as long as I'm not deliberately trying to hurt somebody, that really should be okay. And so what I want to leave you with this, listeners, is give yourself grace and kindness. Remember that we are all on a journey, and no matter where that journey is at, we should give ourselves time to learn. It's okay from one moment to the next that we might not understand where we're at, but it's okay to know in a couple of days. It's okay to know in a couple of weeks or years that at this point in my life, this is how I was feeling and this is how I responded. And then growing from those things and making them part of your personality in a way that you love. I love so many sides of who I am as a person emotionally. I love my personality. I love how I interpret things. I love the idea of I'm going to make mistakes and mess up over and over and over again. And I'm going to learn and learn and learn. And then for things that were toxic, that were beat into us as children, I'm going to unlearn and unlearn and unlearn. And that's so cool about being an adult and being human and being queer and having all of these different identities. And it just made me me. So yeah, I hope you got something out of this, listeners. Bye.
Hi, everybody. This has been another episode of A Gem of a Secret Podcast. The host of A Gem of a Secret Podcast is Coco Gem Holiday. Our music was provided by Touche Douche and Party Favors. You can follow them on Instagram at Touche Likes Beef and Party Favors Music. Please follow us online at www.agemofasecretpodcast.com. That is a JEM of a secret podcast.com or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Our episodes are released every Thursday. Bye-bye.